Hi there, and welcome to this episode of A Couple Takes on MS. Hi, I'm Dan Digman.
And hi, it's me, Jennifer Digman.
And we're A Couple Takes on MS. I'm walking.
And I'm rolling.
But together, we're moving forward. Today, Jennifer, this has been, I don't want to say like a long time dream, but this, I feel very fortunate. Today, we are so happy and proud and grateful to welcome Ardra Shepherd to our podcast. Ardra Shepherd, she's a trailblazing voice in the MS and disability communities, celebrated for her sharp wit and candid storytelling. She is the creator of the award-winning blog and podcast Tripping on Air, which has built an impressive social media following. Yahoo Lifestyle reported that @Tripping on Air is the number one chronic illness account to follow on Instagram. Named one of the Kit's 2023 Changemakers, Ardra's work has been featured in Fashion, InStyle, WebMD, BezzyMS, Healthline, and other magazine and online publications. As a host of AMI TV's Fashion Dis and a consultant on various TV projects, Ardra is reshaping the narrative around disability. Her highly anticipated memoir, Philosophy, continues to explore these themes with her trademark blend of insight and humor. Ardra lives in Toronto, and she's with us today. Ardra, welcome to the podcast.
You guys, thank you so much for having me. It's always a treat to chat with you. I follow your journey on social media as well. I know we've chatted in the past, so it's like really nice to just catch up and talk about MS and the book and have that virtual drink.
Yes, let's have a virtual drink. let's do that. And you are on to such incredible things. And I have been enjoying your book. And it's just incredible that you're here to talk with us. And Dan and I are thrilled.
I guess, first off, Ardra, congratulations on the book and the release. This was released in March of this year. And do you feel like this is just a magnificent feat of a lifetime of what you've done?
Yes. I'm not going to pretend that it doesn't feel like the most incredible thing. I mean, to have a book published at all is very difficult, and it's really rare. And so I feel really lucky and fortunate to be writing at this time when stories like mine are where there's interest in them, and to have found a publisher that I really connect with. And I don't know. It's really a dream come true. It's a weird thing in a way to wrap your head around, because like the thing that sucks the most in my life has also facilitated this like amazing accomplishment. But it's just been kind of magical, and really one of the like the fun part now after it's written is connecting with people who are seeing themselves in the book, who are finding humor and levity and realness and feeling seen. And that's been really, really cool. It's been crazy. It's amazing.
And it's something to be very proud of. And I would imagine to feel very accomplished. And it is a crappy disease. And as our mutual friend Damian Washington says, it's a crappy disease to meet the best people, a crappy way to meet the best people. And for you, it's a yucky disease that has given you the best platform to share your story. And so I imagine that's a mixed blessing, but more of a blessing than most people can imagine. How did you always intend, I mean, certainly before you had MS, did you have ambition to write?
No, I've always been a big reader, and I've always enjoyed writing. I've kept a diary my whole life. Anytime I travel, I make whoever I'm traveling with write in the travel journal, like every day that we're away, whether it's my friends or my husband. I'm intense that way. I have always enjoyed that process, but even when I started the blog 10 years ago, I didn't have designs on writing a book. Like, first of all, I didn't even know if I was a good writer when I started that blog. I'd only ever been writing for myself. So it's kind of a surprise and a delight also, because I talk about this in the book about how MS can rob you of a lot of things, including identities that you cherish and are precious to you. And that certainly happened to me. And so being able to reinvent and find this, like, no pun intended, but like next chapter as a writer was really kind of one of the great surprises of my life. So that's something that I try to remind myself of also, that if there comes a time when, for whatever reason, writing doesn't feel like it's available to me anymore, like, there's always that possibility that I'm going to find purpose in something else.
That just amazes me. I mean, when you say that as far as your writing and that you didn't feel like it, I mean, Ardra, I went to school. I'm a professional writer. I read your writing. I'm reading this book. And I mean, you have just a way to capture your voice and just the way you write and the style and the callbacks and the way that things are just like effortlessly and seamlessly woven into the copy. I'm just like, I mean, it's literally captivating. I mean, it's just, I mean, and I have the attention span of a gnat, and I honestly, you know, truth be told, I don't do a ton of reading because I'm proofreading and editing all day. But I mean, I'm just, I was sucked in from, you know, from word one in this book. So I think that's where, because this was monumental. And I think that you were diagnosed with MS in 2001, and it had taken you like 14 years or so till you started your blog. I mean, how did you capture all of these stories? Because this, you know, it's a memoir, and we know all of, like, you know, our MS diagnosis stories and things like this, but this does not, like, drone on. I mean, you're just like, you pull us in from the beginning. I mean, so it's like, how were you able to do that? Or was this from your years of diary and everything? Because I feel like I'm right there with you.
It's a great question. And first of all, that's super high praise. Thank you. And I will say, like, luck and talent are interesting things. Like, I worked really hard for a lot of years to be a classical singer. And I worked harder at that than I have to work at writing. And it made me recognize something about the limits to the talent that I was born with as a singer, and made me feel like grateful for some of the luck that comes with, I don't know, whatever natural talent I was born with as a writer. Of course, you have to hone that craft and work at it. I would not have been able to write this book the way I did if I didn't have decades of diaries, like shelves of diaries to pull from. So a lot of the process for me was rereading those diaries. And that's why I wrote the book in present tense. Like, it spans 20 years, but I write it in the present because that's kind of how it was happening in the book. And I mean, the character of me, the Ardra of the book, changes a lot and evolves over the years. So I think it would have been a different book. And we're talking like technical writing stuff, but it would have been different if I was writing it looking back and commenting it through the lens of where I'm at now in my life, instead of trying to like put myself back in that 23-year-old brain and body. And the diaries really helped for that. The other thing that really helped me figure out how to refine exactly what I wanted to say was, like, it's 10 years now, but when I was writing the book, it had been 8 years of writing the blog. And there's like over 100 essays on there. And that helped me improve my writing and figure out the kind of stories that were resonating with the MS audience and community. And I learned a lot just from doing that and really committing to that.
That's powerful. And dovetailing off that, something I think probably is good advice for anyone diagnosed with multiple sclerosis or really any sort of chronic illness, is to potentially keep a diary, just to see how you're, how you change and how you grow. And do you think that your writing and your journaling, your diarying, or writing diary is probably the right way to say it, has helped you manage your illness?
Yes, because there is a very strong narrative still, but especially when I was diagnosed 20 years ago, and you guys probably can relate to this, of just like this pressure to be this palatable, plucky, I can do hard things patient, where you are, and a lot of times having to reassure the ones around you that you're okay. And the diary, you don't have to do that in your diary. You can be as raw and real as you need to be. And my frustration with books about MS and memoirs in particular that I had read when I was first diagnosed was feeling this kind of sanitized version of what it was like. And it didn't resonate with me. I didn't want to write that. I wanted to write it as true as I felt it. And so, you know, it's easier, I think, to do that in a book once you've had a chance to like come to terms with things and make sense of it. You're not really doing it in real time. So the people in your life maybe don't need to be as alarmed about your meltdowns and freaking out. You know, by the time the book gets published, you're probably okay.
And that was one thing that really, really, it touched me, and it felt so close to you, even though, you know, you're miles away. But when you were writing about the frustration of the orange juice, opening orange juice, and just little things like that, frustration with the bathroom, making an accessible bathroom, for example, I was like, oh, I get you. You get me. And that was so comforting. But it was also someone, like when I don't want to use the word batshit crazy, but when I'm angry like that.
Please use the word batshit crazy.
Just when I get so frustrated, and I love Dan so much, and I know you love your husband, but just when you have those moments, and even though Dan lives with the disease, when I'm fuming and I'm so angry, it's nice to see, not that you deal with that too, but just that that's common and that I'm not crazy.
Normal.
No.
You're not. And I think it's something like you're not told or taught or given the tools of like, where are we supposed to put that anger?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it's your, when it's your own body doing this to you, it's like, and the orange juice, you want to throw it at the wall, but you're not strong enough.
No.
And then you'd have to clean it up. You're just making it worse. You know?
Yes.
Where do we put that anger? And I don't always know the answer, that's for sure.
No.
And I'm lucky that my partner is patient, because I'm not sure I would be as patient.
Do you think that patience potentially, and I'm not sure, is because your partner or your, you know, any of our, you know, I have a caregiver, she doesn't have MS. Do you think that the patience is potentially because they don't have the disease, and so they don't fully understand, and they just give us a little more grace? Whereas, I don't know, that I wonder that myself when I'm getting all crazy and snippy with my caregiver, for example, I think, how does she put up with me all the time?
Because you pay her, right?
Yeah, well, that is true. But also, I think they're just, I don't know. Sometimes I wonder when we are all shrieky and crazy. Dan, why do you?
I think it helps to remind ourselves of the humanity of the people giving us grace and patience. Remind yourself of the moments when they are not at their best self, mm-hmm. and when they are not the perfect best versions of themselves. I think, yes, it can take a lot of grace to kind of step back and realize like, oh, this isn't about me. This person is lashing out because, you know, something's going on with their body, their brain, like they're having a bad day or a bad moment, mm-hmm. even. And but like everyone, MS or not, we all are not our best selves all the time. And I feel like my husband is like not his best self in different ways than I am not my best self. And maybe that's what works for us. I don't know.
I think that's good. That's good explanation, good advice. So I appreciate that.
And I think then, too, before we go any further, then there will be links within the liner notes for this for how you can purchase and order Ardor's book. I think it just everyone deserves to have a copy in their library on this. And so, Ardor, you know, as we look at this, and, you know, you were diagnosed in 2001 and you have this book 2005 and everything you did, I mean, from
2025.
Oh, my gosh. That's right.
Oh, isn't that crazy? Just when you talk about 10 years or, you know, how quickly time goes.
Well, I thought I was only going to be 52 when my birthday in a month. I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to be 53. What the heck? Okay. So
you have to stop counting after like 45. That's my theory.
Amen to that.
But so let's say then 2025, but then as you're putting this book together, and I mean, and obviously, you know, you write about this, you do things with your blog, with your podcast, and the MS is in your face all the time. But I mean, when you look at from day one with that, in writing this book, did it surprise you how far you've come? Or is this, I mean, just because you're living your life every day, but now it's just like when you look back and say, I remember what that was like in 2001. Are you surprised how far you came?
Yeah. Oh, that's such a good question, because yes and no. Yes, 90% of the time, 10% of the time, it's like, why am I not better at this by now? Those dark moments, right? When I'm like, I know how to do this. I've done it before. And the feeling like you can't is the unrelenting bad MS day. I feel like I should be better at this by now. I shouldn't be freaking out. And most of the time I'm not. So I would say that's a yes and no, depending on when you catch me.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly yes.
I'm so there with you. Yeah, you're just like...
I think it's most of us, right? Like, we're not... We do adapt. It is not unique to me. I think it's normal to freak out when we're diagnosed. This shit is hard. But I know a lot of people with MS now, and they live hard, but joyful, full lives.
Mm-hmm.
They're not waking out every day.
No, we're not waking out every day, and it is good to know with this community that we all share that, you know, that there's no one person with MS that's like, oh, this is a piece of cake, that we're all fair with each other, that it's not a disease for the weak, and I think that's important to recognize that you're stronger than you think or stronger than you realize.
But these are the stories that I feel like we were fed 20 years ago of that there was kind of like two extremes of either you're totally fine or you're totally miserable. I just feel like the stories that we had access to 20 years ago weren't really realistic. There was like, here's how you can overcome it and cure it with this like miracle, whatever, that doesn't work or not. There was no narrative of like, this is going to be hard, but here's how you can adapt and live with it. Like, to me, that message has always felt like it seems like it's encouraging us to kind of give up or give in to MS. When I think it's the opposite is true. It takes a lot of strength to adapt and find a workaround rather than to just kind of be in like denial all the time or fighting.
Yes. And I think one place that is really powerful and is representing that I never thought about is it sounds strange, but fashion. You know, I don't know about you, but when I was diagnosed back in the beginning, I thought, oh, everything is going to change, and you know, I'm going to have to start not caring about my appearance as much, and I'm not going to wear cute clothes, and I'm not going to wear fun shoes as the disease progresses. And now fast forward to 2025, and there's adaptable fashion. And, you know, Dan and I are lucky that we live on the campus of Central Michigan University, and we've been involved in some of their fashion and apparel merchandising and saw how they make an effort to make adaptive fashion. But I know that's big for you. Would you mind just talking about that quickly?
I love talking about fashion. And you're so right. Like, what year were you diagnosed, Jennifer?
I was diagnosed in 1997.
Yeah, like, even I started thinking about fashion as it pertained to my MS, my disability, around 2017, because that was when I started to really need mobility aids. And so it was really like the first time that I had to confront that my access to fashion was changing. But not just that, that there were no examples. There was this erasure of people with disabilities in the culture, like not just on runways, but in TV and film and even Instagram. I looked for examples I could emulate or just see myself in. And it is so encouraging to me to see how much that landscape has changed in the last 5, 6, 7 years. It is dramatically different. It is much easier now to find our peers rocking cute outfits and mobility aids, the things that I struggled with like really recently. And it encourages me to think, like, it's just sometimes the world just feels impossible, like it's falling apart. And then I think about the positive changes that we have seen, and it you know, it begs the question of, like, what's next? What's coming next? And there are more and more adaptive and inclusive and universal brands doing these designs, like Lululemon and Skims, like major brands, not just niche ones. Mm-hmm. Although God bless the niche ones too, who have, you know, like the grassroots small designers who have really, like, spearheaded this movement. And I think it's exciting. Like, I still really miss heels, but shoes are getting better.
Yes.
And I'm excited to see the definition of, you know, what we deem worthy of celebrating and looking at change. And, you know, it's also important as I get older, seeing older faces, women, bodies, people, just, you know, I just want to see all of it.
I want to see it all, and I don't want to. I remember when I'm a wheelchair user now, but when I was first starting to lose my mobility, how I would take photos of myself, but I would hide my cane, or I would move my walker out of the way.
Yes, I feel like everyone, like, I've heard this story so many times, and I did it too. And it, oh God, the message that we are reinforcing for ourselves when we do that.
And now,
and you can't blame us, right? Like, right. It's the society. Yeah, that is. Yeah.
But now we're seeing strong voices like yourself, strong people, where it's like, no, look at my, you know, kick-ass cane, or look at my walker with, you know, that's not ugly. It's functional. It helps me. It makes it possible for me to stay in the world, for me to be, you know, out there. So I think that's important. And I think the accessible fashion is so exciting. So I wanted to just talk about that with you quickly. So thank you.
Yeah, really, it's fun. It's like, I don't know how much I should say, but my next book is going to be in that space. So
that's exciting.
Did you say next book?
I know. You know what? I'm such a hypocrite because right after the book came out and I was getting asked in interviews, like, what's next? And I was like, Lord, let's look resting on my laurels. I don't know. But yeah, I am working on just really starting to kind of map out another book, and it's exciting to kind of have that focus and direction and another project to work on.
And with this, I mean, in doing the process of writing the book, I mean, what surprised you, or was there anything that surprised you about the process and doing, I mean, how long did it take from the moment you said, mm-hmm. I'm doing this to, what was it, March 4th, 2025?
I think what is surprising is how slow the publishing world moves. So I don't think that I write quickly. I do a lot of self-editing. I'm kind of a perfectionist. I don't like to submit anything until I feel like it's really sharp and exactly what I want to say. And it, I guess it just like surprised me how long it even just takes to get, you know, your agent to submit your pitch and then the pitch to be accepted and then the paperwork to be signed. And then I probably spent like a good year writing it. And then after it went to the publisher, it goes to like a substantive editor and a copy editor and a fact checker. And like that whole process was, I learned so much. It's really interesting. You know, and then just like consulting on the cover design. And the artist actually, who did the cover, her mom has MS, so she felt that it was very meant to be. That was just a coincidence. So, but I thought that was really cool. So, yeah, I mean, nothing that was like juicy goss or shocking and dark. Just like, it's been a really interesting learning process. And, but yeah, I think it's like, so long from the time you sign that book deal to the time it comes out. That said, I didn't submit a manuscript. I pitched the book on like 3 chapters. So I think normally you would like write the whole book and then try and sell it. I didn't do that. So I guess maybe that saved me a year.
Yeah. But congratulations. That's pretty incredible that you were able to do this and to make this wonderful.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
It's really, I think I owe a lot to Trippers, as I like to call my fans, but like the audience that has been like dedicated to following the blog and the social media and just like interested in what I have to say is I'm really strong driving force in communicating to a publisher that there's any kind of audience or market for a book like this. My agent said, you know, you're a good writer, but don't write a memoir. No one's going to buy a memoir. And I tried actually to write a novel. It was like my first stab. I'm like, I'm going to write a fictionalized version of this. And it was terrible. And finally I just said like, I don't care. I'm going to write what I want to write. Like, this is the book that I need. This is the story that I need to tell.
Yes. And so, fortunately, we needed to read it. We need this voice out there. So it's really just a win-win for yourself and for us. So
what goes on in your mind? Because I think this is what's so incredible about your writing and your style and what you do. I mean, this is, you know, with the book and then your blog and everything before this, but it's like you have a way of being just point blank honest and real about things, yet there's still some levels of inspiration and like we can move forward. I mean, how do you, especially when you're putting together a compilation of a book of like what, 260 some pages, to get that balance of saying, you know, to where it's just like we want to continue to be optimistic. I mean, I just like, how do you do the balance where it's not like running into the rut of this is fearful? I mean, because you have managed to stay just so in the world. I mean, you didn't like let MS knock you out and keep you behind the door, you know, if that makes sense.
I'm it totally makes sense. And I also, I think it is that I admit that MS does take things from me and kicks my ass from time to time. And I do have to like submit to it. I think maybe my personality is this balance of like cynical butch with like optimist. So like I'm really like grateful for my life and am like a positive, optimistic person who is also like very cynical and kind of itchy.
It's a perfect balance.
I mean, so I think it's like, I don't, maybe it's like a like an optimist realist.
I like that.
I do too.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm like being super self-analytical now, but
no, that's good. That's what we need.
I think it's like the ability to hold two thoughts at once, right? Of like, this sucks, and also like, yay, we're alive.
Isn't that life with MS? It's just, just having to carry, you know, maintain so many sides of yourself, so many personalities. Not that we're all a bunch of schizophrenics, not to put that in a negative way, but just there are so many sides to our personality depending on what the disease is doing to us or what we're doing to the disease on a certain day.
It's like we live in a world with pain and paralysis, but also cheese and puppies.
Yes. Thank God for the cheese and thank God for the puppies.
Exactly.
You know, going into this, we had talked, and I said, you know, just like if, you know, the one thing would be so cool is just to be able to go out to a bar and have this conversation over drinks with you. So I guess the softball questions is like, so if we were at the bar, what would you be drinking right now?
I like to drink the season. So I don't know when this pod is going to air. We're in August right now.
I was going to say we're looking end of August.
Yeah. Peach Bellinis or like Basil Smashes. That said, I feel like my book celebrates my love of alcohol more than I actually can tolerate right now. I'm like, one drink is kind of the sweet spot where it takes the edge off my spasticity, and two drinks is where we might have a problem if I have to get up and go to the bathroom. I might not make it.
That's that one that we all know in the MS community. When we go out to have drinks, for example, we want to be as close to the bathroom as possible, and that's just kind of an unwritten rule for all of us. Close to the restroom,
in whatever space.
Yes.
But what about you guys? What are you drinking?
It depends where I'm at. I mean, if we're here in town, I get like local beers. And I always like when we travel, I like doing like the micro brews of the area.
My husband does that. Yeah.
So and I would do that.
I can't ever go wrong with just a simple vodka and cranberry juice.
Nice. I like to say vodka cran because I have a UTI.
Yep, absolutely. And our niece, Dana, my niece, we were just in Iowa this past week and she just turned 21, and this is the first time we were able to have a drink with her, and that was her drink. So her drink of choice, that was perfect. So
that is nice.
Yes,
I do like that when we're out and about and stuff, you know, just to be Jennifer's caregiver and just keep, you know, just intermittently thinking, does she need a baclofen? And Jennifer's like, I've had liquid baclofen, so I'm okay.
It is a win-win. So yes,
guys, these are the medical hacks that the doctors don't tell you.
No. Well, we want to be respectful of your time. And is there anything left that you would like to share with us, Ardra, about your book, about your time with multiple sclerosis in your future?
I mean, it's all in the book. It's great chatting with you guys. I'm always saying, like, there just should be a convention for the MS people. It would be really really cool to just hang out with everyone in person. I will say, I know you said, Dan, you're going to put it up in the notes, but it was important for me and my publisher to make sure that the book is accessible to everyone. Mm-hmm. So it is available on e-reader. The audiobook is also available. It's narrated by me. It's paperback.
I was going to ask about that. And we also
did a large print. Yeah.
Well, that's what's so awesome. And I haven't had a chance to check out the audiobook, but it's like, because I know you, because I hear you, I watch the podcast and everything like that, but it's just like, I hear you as I'm reading it, but it's like, I would be so intrigued to hear the audio, just hear you say, because that makes it so authentic and so, you know, as I said earlier, that's like, I'm in the room with you, or I'm experiencing things when you're driving in the car after with your dad after you're diagnosed and stuff, and just like right there. But I mean, mm-hmm. to hear you do that. So we'll just have all the information, just because I think this is, again, this is a book that everybody needs to read.
Aw, thanks, Dan. It's such an honor for me to have people reading it, and it was really fun doing the audiobook, all the snark. It was really fun. I only made myself cry once. That was surprising.
Yes.
It's been a ride.
Yes. Well, I think we're going to...
I was going to say that we'll come back, but this is something where, I mean, as we speak about audiobook and everything and hearing your voice, we talked for something for our podcast, and I'll let Jennifer take it from here.
Okay. Well, we are proud to introduce our podcast segment, MS in Their Voices. And this segment features the writing of MS authors who will read their own powerful words in their voices of their essays, their poetry, and prose. But for this episode, Dan and I are excited to introduce you to Ardra Shepherd. Ardra is an award-winning blogger and podcaster, the creator and host of AMI TV's Fashion Dis, winner of the 2023 Screen International Global Production Award in Cannes, a trailblazing advocate for the MS and disability community, and she is one of over a million people in North America with multiple sclerosis. Her book, Philosophy, My Trip Through Life with MS, was released March 4th, 2025. And we are lucky to have Ardra read a segment of her book for our feature in Their Voices.
Thank you, Jennifer. I'm going to read the first chapter, and I guess I'll just start, right?
Yes.
Okay. Chapter one, Dear Satan, I don't exactly believe in witchcraft, but I'm open to a free consultation. I light more candles than is safe, considering the fake cobwebs that overwhelm my already cobwebby apartment. My girlfriends sit in a circle on the living room floor, laughing and chewing on candy necklaces. They're dressed in miniskirts, high heels, and heavy makeup. Their cowboy hats and cat ear headbands, barely qualifying their skimpy outfits as costumes. It's Halloween, and we're about to hit the club where the bartender works. But first, we pregame over several bottles of red wine, not caring that it's a Tuesday. I dim the lights and join the coven, opening a book of hocus-pocus incantations I picked up I don't even know where. I look for spells that might fix my life, like double-double, toil and trouble, release me from the corporate hustle. In the cauldron's bubbling moan, boil and bake my student loan. Fire, burn, in all its splendor, why am I sleeping with a bartender? Lizard's leg and owlet's wing, somebody cleans my apartment. It's not our intention to ask the underworld for anything truly evil. We're just looking for a few shortcuts that will make us skinny, improve our credit, and give our enemies acne. Unfortunately, the Book of Spells turns out to be useless. All we can find are some Glinda the Good Witch meditations that promise to release negativity through the power of visualization. I definitely bought it at an Indigo in the suburbs and not on the dark web. We do a round of shots and make up our own spells. We give up on potions because all I have in my pantry is table salt and a half-eaten box of Fruit Loops. Plus, I don't have a cauldron. I don't even have a soup pot. In fact, I have only one pot, and it's just big enough to heat up a can of noodles. Never mind that it's not even clean right now. I also don't own a dishwasher. I could ask my neighbors if they have any Eye of Newt, but I wouldn't know where to find a lizard's leg. I'm not sure what an owlet is, but I'm pretty sure it's endangered. My friends and I may not be competent witches, but intent matters, and our objectives weren't exactly innocent. A few weeks later, I will think back to that drunken night and consider that my attempted conversation with the underworld and the shady deals I tried to strike with the Prince of Darkness somehow led to my diagnosis. Random shit doesn't just happen. Bad things happen to bitchy people, and it couldn't just be terrible luck that I'd gotten MS. There had to have been a reason, and for a few years, I will believe the reason is me.
Wow. Priceless. That is amazing. Thank you for sharing that with us, Ardra. Oh my goodness.
This is beautiful. We'll get the audiobook. I mean, that's just so, again, couldn't put the book down. I mean, it's just that good.
Thank you.
Oh, you guys, thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure. You guys do such important work and share such an important perspective in this space.
We're following your lead. Ardra, I mean, we appreciate you being here with us. And again, we'll have links and liner notes and everything for how you can get access to her book, you know, audiobook, paperback, you know, in your hands kind of thing. And we'll have that. And then how you connect with Ardra on social media. We're very fortunate. So thank you again for coming and sharing your story and perspectives with us and people listening to the podcast. And so
thank you.
Oh my gosh. And so what we'll wrap it up. And Ardra, after we do that, just hang on, because we'll continue this conversation. But but until next time, thank you all for listening. This has been A Couple Takes on MS. I'm Dan Digman, and I'm walking.
And I'm Jennifer Digman, and I'm rolling.
Until next time, we keep moving forward. Take care.